Session 167, July 5, 1965. The Early Sessions, Volume 4. Good evening. Rob. Good evening, Seth. Seth. The personality must always be considered as motion, for no aspects of it are ever still. With the exception of the ego, the various parts of the personality do not react to time as a series of moments. All is experienced as present. The child, therefore, within the adult personality is not dead, nor are his reactions considered, basically, as reactions which are part of a past behavior pattern. But these reactions exist side by side with adult reactions. This should be clearly understood, yet the personality is far from static. But what it was always changes, but that which was is always taken along. We are going to have a brief session this evening for several reasons, but there are a few points considering the personality which I did want to make clear. That which was is constantly taken into what you call the present. The ego may choose to use or not use various reactions. It may reject various reactions as part of the past, for it is the ego alone who is concerned with past, present, and future. The ego's denial of a reaction, however, does not cause the reaction to disappear from within the personality, at least as part of possible pattern reaction. Many reactions, many patterns of reactions, are rejected by the ego upon some occasions and accepted upon other occasions. But as a rule, such alternate behavior is annoying to the ego itself. The ego deals with cause and effect, and often denies particular reactions because it decides that they are not effective. The ego is fairly rigid, comparatively speaking. Rationalization is one method by which the ego justifies its acceptance of a reaction which it once rejected as ineffective. Such alternative reactions frighten the ego because they seem to injure the ego's self-image. Yet all characteristic reactions, whether denied by the ego or not, are kept for use as alternate actions. In many cases, actions unacceptable to the ego may be precisely those actions that are necessary for other areas of the personality. When too many actions are restricted by the ego, they may begin to form impulse patterns or groupings of various rejected impulses. These then adhere through attraction and attempt to find expression regardless of the ego's attempt to restrict expression. The ego must act, therefore, as a director of activity in the personality's relationships with the physical environment. The ego is concerned with purposeful action. However, when the ego is too restrictive, its conception of purposeful action becomes so narrow that many legitimate and necessary impulses are dammed up, forming these rejected action patterns. As the number of rejected impulses grows, more and more energy is, of course, concentrated in this area, the energy that is inherent within the impulses themselves. This sort of grouping together of rejected impulses will occur mainly when the ego's restrictions are too severe, so hampering that very deep and basic needs of the whole personality are being denied expression. It is, therefore, for the benefit of the whole personality that these impulses be given expression. I suggest your break. In many instances, the ego then feels a lessening of available energy, and a definite shortage of energy may occur, so that the ego finds it more difficult to handle its relationships with the outside environment. It feels the concentration of energy that has collected to form the rejected action patterns, and indeed it may feel that this unified reaction pattern is then even an enemy to its own superiority. It may, with more force than ever, attempt to hold back the expression of these impulses, and its fear of them grows. The rejected action patterns, however, will find outlet. The nature of the outlet will be the result of the nature of the particular patterns themselves. The quality of the outlet will depend upon the intensity of these patterns, and the necessity, or the degree of necessity, for their expression. Unless some adjustments are made at this point, the ego will have nothing to say with the direction that these patterns may take, simply because it will not accept their legitimacy. The strength of the ego, of course, is also a factor here. If the ego is not a particularly strong one to begin with, however, the conflict will seldom reach these proportions. Instead, the ego will merely be slightly surprised at behavior which it does not condone, but eventually will accept because it has been forced to recognize its reality. When the ego is a very rigid one, however, it will not accept the reality of these rejected patterns so easily, and according to the nature of its rigidity, it may resist so many areas of activity that the inside action, or the inside impetus for expression, almost equally balances the ego force itself. As this point is reached, the ego obviously becomes more disturbed. In very few cases, however, does the conflict reach this sort of proportion. A lack of communication between the ego and the inner self is obviously one of the main causes for such difficulties. We will use tonight's material as a basis for some other discussions. This evening's session will be a brief one. We will hold Wednesday's session as usual. I am interested here with a regeneration of energies at this time. I am indeed pleased that this was a quiet session, and I prefer that sessions this week be fairly brief. You can both use the rest and regenerate your energies. You may need them. Rob, why? Jane smiled, her eyes still closed. Seth, I anticipated you would ask the question when I made the statement. It was no coincidence that you both took today off. The freedom was excellent for both of you, and I am simply giving you the opportunity to regenerate your energies. They are not at low ebb, but an excess of energy will serve you both well during your symposium. We will hold Wednesday's session, however. I will now bid you a fond good evening and my best wishes to you both. We have had quite intensive sessions for some time now, and I simply prefer that you are allowed a rest before your trip. There is something here we will discuss at a later date concerning the rhythms within these sessions, for they follow certain inner rhythms of activity, and I am always concerned that we use these to advantage. In some cases, this entails longer and more intensive sessions. At other times, it involves shorter sessions, particularly when I have some eye out for future events. My best regards now, and good evening. Rob, good night, Seth. Session 168, July 7, 1965. The Early Sessions, Volume 4. Seth, may I now wish you all the heartiest of greetings. I am pleased with our group. However, this will be a short session. It is not because I grow weary. It is merely again that I must watch for your human limitations. And it will be best that you have all available energy at your beck and call later on for your trip. Whenever it is possible, I would suggest that our gentleman with the ulcer read our last sessions. Indeed, I believe that he has somewhat less of an ulcer now, although the degree is slight. I will also, if I may, congratulate the writer of the newspaper article, even though my own name was nowhere mentioned, for it goes without saying that I am indeed truly humble. Rob notes Jane's voice was quite amused. The reference here is to the story Peggy Gallagher wrote for the Elmira Star Gazette concerning Jane's ESP book. It was excellently done and was printed on July 6. Seth, we will not involve ourselves with many deep and weighty matters this evening, and you may slow me down, Joseph, when you prefer. You will find, incidentally, that within a fairly short time, that the stock of which we have spoken will take a quite severe drop, after which it will slowly rise. Rob notes, see the 166th session, which John Bradley witnessed. Seth discussed John's drug company employer, G.D. Searle, during the session, and stated that Searle's stock was due to fall still more. As of today, July 7, 1965, the stock closed at 55. Seth, there will be three people in particular with whom you will be involved at your meeting, three men. One of these will be younger than the others. There is, I believe, a book which you will be asked to read, and there will be an appointment made. As you suspect, there was no coincidence involved when you chose your doctor in stream. The affair will work out much better now, for in the past circumstances would have prevented not his interest, but his availability. There will indeed be a change that is only now beginning in the daily ways of your lives, and you are both consciously preparing yourselves. The changes will not suddenly show themselves. There is merely a slow beginning. But the initial steps have been made, and the first and initial program have been completed. It is developing even better than I had hoped, and our own material will now begin to really develop, for we have enough background to enable us to cover subject matter that would have been impossible at an earlier time. But the first portion of our program has been completed in many other ways, having to do with the development of abilities and with the development of that gestalt which we now form. I will suggest your break, and we will then at least briefly continue. I would here add, however, that those others in this room have also helped us in at least one phase of our program. Take your break, and then we will continue. Seth, it was from the beginning necessary, not only that Rupert's abilities be developed, but also that Rupert's ego not be left in the dark. His ego is indeed a healthy and vigorous one, but a stubborn bent. For our purposes, however, this is actually excellent, for he is learning effectively to operate well in the physical environment, while at the same time he is manipulating within the inner reality. This is a difficult procedure, and in all cases and in all developments of this nature, there must be no attempt made to browbeat the ego, for in this way lies schizophrenia and disorientation. Rupert's abilities now are beginning to develop. We are sure of our foundation, and this was most necessary. We can now begin shortly on other aspects of our program, the second. You are not unfamiliar with this program, Joseph, nor indeed is Rupert. Your own inner knowledge is most adequate. It is Rupert's independent ego that is here a strong helpmeet for us, for since we have taken it into consideration, it allows us leeway while automatically keeping the whole personality in good balance. His abilities will indeed improve to a large degree. Your own strength and balance and inner abilities provide a large part of the psychological climate in which we can operate. You also act in that you provide both added energy and help Rupert to receive these communications. I had promised you that I would explain more clearly the nature both of your abilities and their part in our venture, and so I will. I mentioned, if you recall, Peggy Gallagher last year, and the couple I knew had peculiar abilities that would help us here. Rob notes, see the 63rd session in Volume 2. Jane now smiled and turned toward Lorraine Schaefer. Her eyes were still closed. Seth, there will be not answers, but questions, shortly for our other guest. We shall provide the questions, and she shall provide the answers. She is asking the wrong questions, and the answers to them will not help her. We will also have more to say concerning the ways in which such a gestalt as this is composed. Again, I will let you take a break, for I am dealing relatively easy with you this evening, and then we will again continue. Rob notes, Lorraine was not consciously aware of the questions she has evidently been considering, according to Seth, although she said she is aware of the ideas she has about the Seth material. Jane resumed, Seth, I was not speaking of specific questions. I did not think that our guest had a list of questions from 1 to 10, which I was being asked to consider. I was speaking of those questions which our guest asks herself, and these are the questions that she subconsciously would like me to answer. We will go into these matters again upon another occasion. There are a few other remarks that I would make concerning your journey. First of all, although I said earlier that Rupert should not take a vacation, in many respects he will not be taking a vacation. He will have much to do. Rob notes here, Jane smiled broadly, then sat quietly for a moment. Seth, you can also be of aid, both of you, as far as your brother Bill is concerned, Joseph, and I suggest that you take steps to speak with him, and if necessary, we will hold a session, if the circumstances are correct for our purposes. I see you also in a group of four. If there are five, the fifth will be a woman, and one man in this group will later be of benefit to us. I am pleased indeed that we have come so far in such a brief time. We have done well, particularly since the foundations for this sort of venture are so important. We can now go forward, fairly certain, that Rupert is strong enough to carry the burden. It is more than worth his while. I regret that you yourself have been so necessarily preoccupied of late in preparation for the journey. And yet, Joseph, this is also well worth your while. I am taking the opportunity to speak concerning these matters, since I had already decided not to cover any complicated material for our session. I am also giving you more frequent breaks, since I am aware again that your energies will be needed. Our material in general, however, can now expand, and indeed, though not always, some extra dimensions and perspectives may be added to our sessions. I anticipate meeting the distinguished company. I here suggest your break, for I am not going to give you a preview. You have much to look forward to. By all means, take your break. And you will see, Joseph, that I am not overworking your fingers. Rob notes break at 9:55. Jane was well dissociated, as usual. The discussion that followed during break was very lively. Jane's voice had been loud last delivery and active, and she resumed in the same manner, smiling often at 10:05. Seth, as always, I find myself amused at your discussions, and I always seem to be lurking somewhere in their shadows. I am, as you know, a rather humorous gentleman, but someday we will have jokes that are not on me. You have not heard me laugh yet. It can, however, be arranged according to the circumstances, for I do not laugh unless there is something worth laughing at, and we can arrange a good-natured, harmless, but amusing joke at no one's expense. Rob notes, Jane's voice had been climbing the scale somewhat as far as volume went, and her rather fast delivery became even faster. Seth, Jane was highly amused while delivering the above paragraph. Strangely, as far as I recall, no one had ever mentioned the possibility of Seth laughing, myself included. Seth, it is only when I am not concerned with our weighty material that I can afford thinking in these directions. The second phase of our program will include definite expansions in the scope of our general material. It will show expansions in the manner in which we allow ourselves to operate. We will have greater leeway, and this is to be good. To a large measure, Rupert's confidence has been won. It was most necessary that we go slowly, particularly in the beginning, for if our foundation was not strong, we would have never progressed. The whole venture would have been lost. There is no fate in these matters. Our venture was not fated to be. Our venture represents gestalts of energy coming together in quite natural manners. It was necessary, however, that we meet in such a manner without clashing. Many sessions ago we spoke of transparency, and I said that true transparency was not the ability to see through, but to move through. Rob notes, see the 12th session in Volume 1. Seth, energy moves through all fields and all systems. You are enabling the energy which is yourself to realize its existence within other systems. And speaking merely in terms of energy and action, we are here involved with transparent motion as energy moves from one system to another. This is not done at all times, but the ego is not always aware either of the motion nor of the other systems involved. Through your own abilities, and particularly through circumstances that happen to be favorable, you are able, with my help to some degree, to add this experience of mobility to your natures and transfer the knowledge to the conscious ego. We will later be concerned more deeply with this transparent mobility, for it operates within all systems, and without it, your own physical system would not exist. When the nature and behavior of energy as it is seen in action is understood, and when it is applied to the mobility of the human personality, then such sessions as ours will be taken for granted, though this, I admit, will take a while. I will now let you take a break, or as you prefer, you may close the session. Rob, we'll close it then. Seth Jane smiled. Seth, I will then meet with you shortly. My best regards and heartiest good wishes to you all. Rob, good night, Seth. Rob notes, a lively discussion now developed among us as to the nature and possible origin of the brogue or accent Jane had displayed during most of the session. The discussion was sparked because of Seth Jane's pronunciation of the words fate and stock in particular and others similar. Bill and Lorraine did not believe the accent to be Irish, even considering Jane's early years in an Irish neighborhood and her association with Irish priests. Bill Gallagher knows something about languages. He made so many good points that I asked him to write them down for the record. He had just begun when Seth came through again loud and clear. Jane's voice was strong but not close to matching the rather spectacular 158th session, for example. It was obvious that she and Seth enjoyed the proceedings immensely. She spoke rapidly and used many gestures, but her eyes remained closed throughout. Resume at 10:44. Seth, I am not going to hold you up. However, I see that our group will have its Jesuit member. Rob notes Bill Gallagher's head went back in a soundless laugh. Seth, I shall be discussed from all angles and scrutinized, and like the monks in the Middle Ages, we will wonder if I can fit on the head of a pin. But I will not get stuck. I am indeed flattered, and as Rupert mentioned, a change of perspective is good. The inquiring mind of our Jesuit member is indeed refreshing, and the very inquiry does him good. He hit upon several excellent points, and he will discover more. I enjoy this Jesuit, and for Rupert's benefit, I will indeed tell you that the likeness that you have painted of me, Joseph, is excellent. Rob notes, her eyes still closed, Jane pointed to a portrait I had just hung. It was of a short, heavy-set bald man beckoning to the viewer to come closer. I had been working on it for some weeks. The idea for it had come to me one day, and I had begun work on it at once. In view of some rather odd sensations it had engendered within me, I had thought it might refer to Seth or myself in a previous life. Jane had admired it at once, even from the first drawing, and insisted all along that it pictured Seth. It is of interest here to note that in the 134th session, Seth also announced that I had painted a likeness of him. This painting shows a much younger, blonde man bearing no resemblance to the other portrait. I have not asked Seth about the discrepancy yet, of course, but Jane feels they both represent different facets of the Seth entity or personality. Seth, I knew that Rupert would recognize me, and the word fate is pronounced fate. Rob notes, this play upon words in Seth Jane's particular accent brought forth laughter from the group. Seth, I will now, with my true dignity, bring this faithful session to a close. I would continue, but for my innate good manners. I will, at another occasion, give our Jesuit some rather fateful measures to contemplate, and perhaps we will ask him how many ulcers can sit on the head of a pin. My best and most sincere wishes to you all. I will sign myself faithfully yours. Rob, good night, Seth. Rob continues to note, Jane took quite a few moments to open her eyes. She said a word Bill had used had started her off again, to her own surprise. Bill said Seth used the Jesuit simile to make his point very well. He also said his ulcer had been much improved lately. It had bothered him a little earlier today, for instance, but hardly at all this evening. Jane was keenly aware of Seth's emotions during the above delivery. She said, and as always, it made the delivery most enjoyable. When this involvement takes place, she feels reserves of energy sweeping her along, welling up from Seth, even when she might feel tired to begin with. Continuing, my sensation of Friday night, July 9, 1965. Sometime during the night, while sleeping in Johnson Hall, a residence hall at Oswego State University College, I was awakened by some noisy students in a nearby hall. It was raining, and I lay in a pleasant, drowsy state. I then began to feel an enlargement in both my hands and in the left side of my face as it lay upon the pillow. The sensation progressed to a remarkable degree, lasted for well over 15 minutes to my estimation, and was unmistakable. The feeling grew until each of my fingers felt themselves to be several inches in diameter. I could literally feel or sense their greatly enlarged diameters. At the same time, I would get the feeling that the fingers of each hand were united or combined into thick, club-like paws, as though I was wearing great baseball gloves. The two sensations were sometimes apparent together. Either or both were very pleasant after the strangeness disappeared, and I lay quietly and deliberately did my best to analyze and remember each sensation. The sensation finally dwindled slowly away. I recall also that as I was drifting off to sleep upon retiring that evening, I had been aware of a slight sensation of tingling or thrilling in my hand. This mild sensation had been a rather standard one for me during psychological time, when presumably I was in a light state of dissociation. This was by far the most pronounced feeling of enlargement that I have experienced, and in separate from the other strong bodily sensations of thrilling, or the feeling of sound as Seth describes it, that I have known upon a few occasions. For data on my other sensations and some visions, see the following sessions. Session 22, 24, 26, 27, 65, 145, 146, 163. These would not include either the fat hands sensations that Jane and I experienced during sessions.